Let me just mention a couple things as we people are settling back in after the break and finding your spot. If you came in late, this was the first three skills, lifelong learners, lead teams, and anticipate the future. And we'll continue to build out these next three here in a moment. And every month on churchleaderinsights.com, which is our website ministry to other pastors, you can go there and find a free podcast. And you just click on the link podcasting. And that's one of those, you know, leading edge kind of things of the iPod and the podcast. Really, all it is, it's a free audio training. Sometimes it's from events like this. Sometimes it's me in the studio. And so every month we try to take a different topic, whether it's preaching calendar or this month we're talking about coaching. And I'm actually talking about attending conferences and things like that. But you can go to the website and click on podcasting. And even if you don't have an iPod, we built it so you can listen to it online. So it plays right there. It's free. You know, you don't have to do anything like that. And if you have an iPod, you can subscribe to it, and it'll download through iTunes and all of that. But it's really just a great free resource that just kind of keeps us in contact and gives us a chance to dialogue on some new stuff. Then my email address is ns, and it's the number 1@nyjourney.com. And NY, or the church has actually changed its website to journeymetro.com. But I've still kept the old nyjourney.com address. And it doesn't matter. If you go there, nyjourney.com rolls over to Journey Metro. But you just have to now pick a campus and all this kind of stuff as part of that. But feel free to email me with anything. And Lauren, who is back here. This is Lauren in the back. Lauren Faultless. So we didn't get a chance to thank her before. She works with me on this, puts all this stuff together, assists me. So you can say thanks to her. And I will add to that. And Lauren helps me out with email, so sometimes she responds to that address and helps me out if you need things along the way. So I just wanted to give you that. Roy mentioned about coaching. I'll answer questions about that before we go to lunch if you have any questions. About 3 or 4 years ago, I started doing coaching networks for church planters. What I found is after, you know, whatever is on the resource table, I'm going to give it to you for free, okay? So I'd like to give you a free resource for being our door hostess. So just see Lauren and, you know, take your choice over there of any free resource because you're doing a great job. I love that. You're on it. Like, boom. And it can be such a distraction if you don't. But I started doing these coaching networks. I started doing it with church planters because I realized there were a lot of church planters who would come to conferences like this, and there would be a few that would just go out and do it, and they would just excel. And then there was another group of people that if they had some more hands-on training, some coaching, they really could excel as well. And I got really addicted to the results, you know, because I would be in a coaching network with guys. I would see them succeed and really excel. And then after doing that for about 2 years, I switched over to doing church growth coaching. That's really what I've been doing for the last couple of years, and that's where Terry and Rick and some of these other guys who raised their hand, Andy's been in two or three networks with me, Vic up here has been in some networks in the back, Phil and some others around, as don't mean to miss anybody, but about every 6 months I do this thing where I receive applications from pastors around the nation. And I pick about 15 of them, and we spend a day together. Peter is part of that. We spend a day together right here. We have a network tomorrow that Peter's in. And we work through church systems and leadership and church growth. And it's really just, Friday's often a real relaxed day for me. But I do this on sort of my down day because I've seen the results for this. I've seen, you know, churches really turn some big corners. I've seen churches grow. And if you'd be interested in that, I would love to have you apply. Because this is usually how it starts. You hear me in a conference like this, you like some of the ideas, and you think, you know, if we had some time, I could really build this out. And there's a cost to be a part of it, and the money buys the commitment. So I don't apologize for the cost. I rarely cut the cost anymore because I found if I start cutting all that, then you start cutting and missing meetings and all that kind of stuff. So the cost is about a commitment, and so I want the bar to be high. You know, you can come here for whatever we charge. You know, what was the seminar, $8? I think, and if you paid more than that, you might want to see Roy get your money back. Because I tell him what I want to charge, and he, you know, takes all the rest of the profit himself. So anything over that, you know, it's probably not worth it. You come to something like this, anybody can come or whatever, but then I really want it to be the, you know, people who are committed to come to the network. So the best thing to do would be to turn in your application today. We already have about 50 applications, I guess, maybe 20 or 30 maybe. Might be more realistic. I sometimes see stacks and think they're much more. But we have a lot of interest in our networks, and they will fill up. And earliness doesn't necessarily guarantee acceptance, but it does get you in the loop faster. So let me know if you have any questions on that. I'd love to talk with you about that if I can. All right, let's go back to our notes. And as you find your place on page 6, I want to tell you about another freebie we want to give you as you leave today for lunch. I told you I was going to be running a little bit over, so probably looking at 12:10 or so to finish this. And so those who persevere to the end, I have a little gift for you. This is actually a talk I did with our interns, and I'm turning it into a resource later that'll be more formal and all of that. But I don't have that for now, but I will give you the sort of internal talk, and it's called Setting and Achieving Godly Goals. And we're going to look at that here in just a moment. So I have that for you on the way out. I give that to you just for free. So just stop by the resource table and pick that up. But that actually ties in very well with where we are on page 6, which is secret skill number 4. Can I borrow your watch? I don't know what I did with mine. I think I got mad at it and stomped it or threw it on the floor or whatever. So now, does this have numbers on it? Because I can't read one. Yeah. Oh, here we go. Yours have numbers on it?
$10.
Okay, it's $10. That's not a problem here. How about a lunch book? Okay, great. Thanks for letting me borrow that. Don't let me lose this one. I lost mine over the break. Okay, so ready now. Here we are on page 6, secret skill number 4. All leaders of growing churches are goal setters. Goal setters. G-O-A-L-S-E-T-T-E-R-S. Goal setters. Once again, goals in some ways have been co-opted by the make $1 million overnight kind of crew, the self-help crew or whatever. But I actually think that there's something about the way humans are wired up to set and achieve goals. And so I define goals in your notes as goals are statements of faith. Goals are statements of faith. And so as you are learning and as you are growing as a leader, God begins to expand your view of what the future could be. You begin to get the people around you that you need to accomplish this dream. And then as you see the future and you realize that, God is putting these forces in motion to grow you, now it becomes time to concretize what that might look like. And so you take this picture of the future that you're developing and you set goals to get you there. And goals are statements of faith. They haven't happened yet. You know, church has been running 150 and they set a goal for 225 because they think that God is leading them to grow and has given them a new hope for the future. That's a statement of faith. You know, you're at 150, you want to grow to 225. You know, so you set this statement of faith. And God honors faith. The power in goal setting is not in necessarily the specifics of setting the goal or in just, you know, name it and claim it kind of stuff. But it's about discovering what God wants to do and then putting a concrete way to accomplish that around that picture, a plan to get you there. So I say in your notes, goals are statements of faith. And I really believe if Matthew 9:29, where Jesus is talking here, were being written today, it wouldn't say, according to your faith will it be done unto you. You might just sort of carefully mark through that word faith. You want to be careful about doing that with the Bible. But you might just write above that word faith and write the word goals. According to your goals, will it be done unto you? And I don't think that's a great stretch, because goals require faith. Goals stretch your faith. And it's only when you have the faith to see the future that somehow you cooperate with God in bringing about that future. So Michelangelo, the guy who painted the Sistine Chapel, or as I heard a guy the other day call it, the 16 Chapel. So it was, you know, part of a whole process of chapels, I guess, 1 through 15, and then, you know, this was 16, I guess. I think he painted the Sistine Chapel, I think is what that is. Had to paint it upside down, you know the story, anyway. Michelangelo said this: the greater danger for most of us is not that our aim is too high and we miss it, but that it's too low and we reach it. Man, that could be said today, huh? So let me give you a short course on goal setting. In your mind, some of you are natural goal setters right now. I won't have you raise your hands. I don't want to point out. Some of you, you know, you have goals for everything. You had a little plan for today and what time you were going to get here. And, you know, you've got a goal for lunch and, you know, you had a goal for the seminar. When I gave that earlier, you're already writing stuff down. Others of us are not so much goal setters or whatever. But let me try to talk to you about that. So a short course on goal setting. This is a little longer than my short course on team leading. Short course on goal setting. Number one, goals provide direction. Goals provide direction. I just did a conference for church planters as part of this book Carrick and I did on church planting. And church planters are pretty entrepreneurial. Matter of fact, who are the church planters in this room? Let me see your hands. God bless you. I see those hands. I'm going to count all those as decisions for Christ. I was ordained Southern Baptist, so somebody raises their hand, man. I'm counting it. But Ray, Ray Pierscotta back here, the gentleman from Staten Island, is a church planter. He's entrepreneurial, man. He if he wasn't starting churches, he'd be starting businesses. I mean, that's just the way he's wired up. He's entrepreneurial or whatever. And so Ray says, well, I don't need a plan. I know where I'm going. I don't have time to write this thing down or whatever. But you see, Ray's weird. And not just in those kind of ways, but like in this entrepreneurial way, he's kind of weird. He may not need that kind of written, concrete direction, but most people who follow him do. As a matter of fact, about 90 to 95% of people say, show me where we're going and I'll go with you. But the reason that a lot of times they don't go with us is because we don't show them where we're going. And I have a whole seminar called the Strategy Seminar where I unpack that goals is just one piece of a strategy and all. But people want to know where they're going. They want direction. And so one of the most powerful things you can do is you can show the way for people. And goals are part of showing the way. Here's where we're going. Here's what we're working toward. I often tell guys in another seminar that the word because is a very powerful leadership word. We're doing this because. We're going to do this because we have this goal. We're doing this because God is leading us in this direction. And so goals give direction, and they focus your energy. Number two, goals build, here's that word again, anticipation and give energy. So it's kind of a twofold thing here for number two. Goals build anticipation and give energy. Now, obviously here I'm using anticipation differently than anticipate the future, but spelled the same with the I-O-N ending. People are wired so that they want to work toward a goal. And sometimes people say, well, my folks aren't very motivated. I can't figure out how to motivate my team. Well, part of the time is because you haven't given them anything to work toward. Have you ever noticed the person who's not motivated at all to get their work done can get really motivated the week before they go on vacation? Why is that? Because they have something to look forward to. That's an old Zig Ziglar illustration. Zig Ziglar, I told you I grew up listening to, he says that you should work every day as if you're going on vacation tomorrow. Because, if we all were going on a two-week vacation tomorrow, we would be very organized and very disciplined today to get everything done for the vacation. Well, if that's how we're doing it, why not do that every day? That's a good time management principle. But goals build anticipation because your people have something to work toward. And, it's that old saying, if everybody's rowing in the same direction, nobody's rocking the boat. And, goals are part of vision and goals are part of directing your church. But there's great anticipation, there's great energy. A person who can be dead to the world wakes up and, it's snowing outside and they don't have to go to work and suddenly they're very energetic. They're excited about it because they have something. They have something to work toward. When it comes to Christmas, for those of us who have children, I have one child who's now, at the time of this recording, 8 months old. So he barely understood colors and paper, this past Christmas. But I've been around kids at Christmas. Have you noticed there's more excitement leading up to the opening of presents than after the presents are opened? Because there's an anticipation of looking toward that goal. This is just how we're wired. There's an energy. There's a rallying point as we go to something. It's more exciting to go on vacation than it is to come home from vacation. This is the way human beings are wired up. And you can use the same setting, the same dynamic in your church to lead your people to accomplish goal and to get energy. And sometimes the reason people don't get involved in your church is because you haven't given them a reason to get involved. And so goals give direction, or build anticipation and give energy as well as direction. Number three, one of the more internal things about goals. Goals force you to become more than you are right now. They force you to become more than you are right now. This is one of my favorite reasons for setting goals. You set goals for what you have to become to achieve them. Here's what I know about most leaders. You're accomplishing about what you're accomplishing right now. And if you're going to accomplish more, you've got to first become more. And so goals help you become more. You put together that reading plan, you start working that plan, you're going to become more. Even if you only do 80% of it, 50% of it, that's more than you are now. Somebody says, well, I only read one book last month. Well, that's one book than, you know, more than you read the month before. You know, and so it makes you become more. So goals change the way you think. Let me give you an example from these coaching networks I lead. Not every coaching network, but some coaching networks I lead. We do a goal-setting exercise. And so we set a church growth goal in the coaching network, and we work toward it. And there's a danger in that. You know, a guy sets a goal. He's running 150, sets a goal to go 225. Guy running 300 sets a goal to run, you know, 600. That's a good exercise, but there's a danger because you don't always hit it. You know, and actually tomorrow, the network we're in, Vic, we're all revealing our goals, you know. And I set this big goal, and we didn't hit it. You know, we didn't hit the big goal. We hit partial, you know, of the goal. And I'm a big fan of, you know, aim for the sun, hit the moon, you know. Aim for the moon, hit the street light, you know, call it success, just keep going, you know. You know, that. So tomorrow when we're sitting around this network, there's this, you know, 15 people have set, you know, 15 different goals for their church. Some are going to hit it. And they're going to tick the rest of us off, you know, because we're sitting around the table and they had, you know, they had this goal of, you know, 600 and they had 685. And we're like, oh, you know, you probably didn't water down the gospel or something, you know, to get that or something like that, you know. And so, you know, but some will hit it, and we'll be all excited, you know. But then others of us will say, oh, you know, we didn't hit our goal. Some will have mediocre success like I had. Others will just, it'll be the same attendance. You know, they didn't hit anything. And they say, well, you know, we missed it. We did it. No, the goal caused them to become more. So even though the plant may not have, you know, fully blossomed yet, there's something that's gone on underneath. They changed their systems. They changed their way of thinking. They started projecting more faith. They built more teams. So here's what I hear sometimes. Well, we know we didn't hit our attendance goal, but I did have more people serving on Sunday than I've ever had. Our giving was up more than it ever was. We did more evangelism in the community than we've ever done. And those are all things that will eventually pay off. And so then what I love is a year, you know, a year and a half after the network's over, they call me and say, we hit our goal. You know, they just couldn't hit it in 6 months, but they could hit it in a year and a half. And you see, what happened was they started to become more, and then the growth follows. Does that make sense? So you set goals for what they make you become. Why do I set goals to read? Because I need to become more, you know. Why do I do these seminars? Because I need this exercise to help me become more. Number four, goals are not created. Actually, you notice I played with the word godly goals here. Godly goals are not created, but revealed. Godly goals are revealed. This is why your goal setting is different from business goal settings. You're not trying to just create goals that are going to maximize profit or maximize shareholder profit. That's what the business world does, you know, maximizing shareholder profit. We're trying to expand the kingdom. So God's dream is bigger than our dream. So we say, God, what's your dream? So goals are an exercise in listening. So goals grow you spiritually as well as grow you organizationally. And that, you know, Proverbs 16:3, Proverbs 16:1, you can look all those up. But I would challenge you as a leader not to just have goals in your church area, but to have goals in all areas of your life. And there's different ways to categorize the different areas of your life. So I gave you six areas for goal setting. Here's an exercise that I wouldn't want you to do over lunch today because you're probably going to have lunch with your team or lunch with a friend or maybe you've got to head out if you're not staying for the afternoon seminar. But I would challenge you, as one of the next steps for today, to set aside 1 hour and to work through these six different goal areas. And so spend 10 minutes on each goal. You know, statistically, we found there's very little difference between goals you write quickly and goals you write slowly. So just look in these different areas and just put the goals down as fast as you can. You know, try to have 10 goals for each of these areas in 10 minutes. And just, you know, put them down. The first five will just flow really fast. I mean, it'll boom, go, and then you'll spend the next 7 or 8 minutes trying to come up with the next five. But what are 10 goals you could have in your personal health area every year? I have some areas. Some I do really well on. Others I struggle with. I mean, every year I always have a lower number for my weight. You know, I'm going to have a lower number for my weight. Now, the good news is it stays the same. The bad news is it doesn't go down, you know. But just think how fat I would be if I didn't have that goal, you know. You're right that. And, you know, then you can write other areas, you know, about exercise and all of that. But what are your personal goals? You know, this is the books you're going to read, the health areas. What are your family goals? You know, I have a goal of a date night. You know, I have a goal of spending time with my family. What are my vocation career goals? And those that actually ties very much with church and kingdom goals for the majority of you in this room. What are my community social goals, you know, going to be? What are my money and investment goals going to be? I mean, really, look out across this crowd. It's a very young crowd. So there's, you know, not a lot of reason that, that most of you shouldn't, you know, retire very well. But ministers especially are behind the norm when it comes to financial investments, because we think we make such, you know, we make less or whatever. But it's really about consistent investing over time. So you got money goals or getting out of debt goals or whatever. And then church kingdom goals. But just 10 minutes, 10 goals on each one for 60 minutes. The statistic is if you write these and you put it in a safe and you don't read it for 10 years and you go and you pull it out 10 years from now, 80% of them will have happened. There's just something about the power of writing goals. You take those same goals, you review them monthly for the next 10 years, 95% of them are going to happen. So there's power in setting goals. You're wired to work toward things. Goals give direction and focus. So God, you know, speak to me over this next 1 hour. I'm listening. You know, I'm quiet. You put them down. And then you start working them out. And you turn them into best goals, which is a play on the old SMART goals phrase. Believable, energizing, specific, and time-bound. So once you write them down in a rough format, go back and write them down in very specific statements that are believable, energizing, specific, and time-bound. That's a short course on goal setting. But I would love to hear and celebrate with you when you accomplish your goal. So, you know, my feedback for this seminar, the way you pay me for this seminar is obviously not through the payment. That goes to the organization, and Roy makes most of that. But my payment for this seminar is for you to accomplish something after it's over. The little email, this is what I did, this is what I learned, this is how we changed, grew, you know, made a difference or whatever. So I'd love to hear as you accomplish your goals, and I'll celebrate with you. And you got to be careful about who you share your goals with. Some people like to steal your goals. Some people like to step on your goals. Some people like to laugh at your goals. Find some people who are going to celebrate your goals with you and the achievement of that. So here's a little point to wrap up this section. I want you to be more than a goal setter. I want you to be a goal getter. That's a little play on the word, getter, G-E-T-T-E-R. It's not just about right goals, but it's about making goals right. It's easy to make goals. You've got to manage your goals. Does that make sense? So, you know, you write them down once and you put them in a safe, you're going to achieve a lot. But if you write them down and then you manage those goals daily and you monitor your progress, you're going to find amazing accomplishment. A couple of things on that. Brian Tracy's book, just simply called Goals, is a compilation of a lot of the business thinking on that. And then this resource that will be out by the time this recording's out, Setting and Achieving Godly Goals. And all of you are getting a free pre-copy of that today. Goal setters. All right. On to skill number 5. I need to set this one up just a bit, too. This one is probably the most surprising skill. This is the one that I guess I least expected of all the 5 or 6 skills that we're looking at. Now, anticipate the future may be a new one for most of you. You know, leading teams, lifelong learners, goal setting, you probably have familiarity with those. I probably reminded you of that. This one may be a new take on something that you know. But this one is the most difficult one to measure, this next one I'm about to give you. But it's also in the one that has the most significant spiritual consequences, if you will. And let me try to explain. All leaders of growing churches are outrageously... O-U-T-R-A-G-E-O-U-S-L-Y. Outrageously generous. Outrageously generous. Turn to your neighbor right now and say, be outrageously generous. Now, see if they'll take you to lunch. You know? Works out well, huh? Now, exactly. All right, I sort of set you up in this last point by saying that most of us didn't go in ministry to get rich. If you are, you're going to be sorely disappointed. You know, you should take care of yourself. You should invest well. You know, you can do all that, but you can be more blessed than you are right now by learning to be generous. And sometimes, because our salary scale is rather low by comparison, we have a tendency in ministry, how can I say it, to be cheap. And the very people that have the most reason to be generous are church leaders. Because we figured out something. We've discovered something that other people haven't discovered. And let me unpack that. In your notes, you make a living by what you get. You make a life by what you give. You probably preach that, but do you live that? You know, we all preach more than we live. Don't get me wrong. You know, that's like this Sunday. I'm teaching a message on marriage that scares me a little bit. You got to what? You know, because I've got to live that out at home. You know, and God's going to test me in that area this week, because I'm teaching on that. But we teach this: you make a living by what you get, but you make a life by what you give. But I really think that's true. And some of the top leaders that I've had a chance to spend time with, I've just noticed this thread of generosity. And yes, there are exceptions. You know, there are misers and there are Scrooges that do very well that are out there. But most people that I've seen really get this principle, because it works even if you're not a Christian. But you can take it to a whole new level if you are. Jesus said, I love the Message translation of this one, or paraphrase. He says, give away your life and you'll find life given back. But not merely given back with bonus and blessing. Giving, not getting, is the way. Generosity begets generosity. Isn't that good? So when you give to God, God doesn't just give back to you. God gives back more than you give to Him. Now, that's an investment I would do every day. I mean, you know, what if the stock market could promise that? Whatever you invest in me, we're going to give you more. You know, but that's what God promises. And so the thing is, we don't often put this into play. John Wesley, who most people don't realize was very wealthy, John Wesley became wealthy through his writing and through his travel and through his speaking. And he really dealt with wealth, and he had to figure out how to do that. And so he was amazingly generous with his life. And he leaves behind a model for what to do when God blesses you with affluence. And I know what some of you are thinking. I'd like to give that a shot, you know. But, you know, it's a great pattern, even if your numbers don't have the same amount of zeros on it. Here's what he said. Do all the good you can by all the means you can, and all the ways you can, and all the places you can, and all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can. So how are you modeling generosity? Three generosity truths, just to frame this. Truth number one, God owns it all. You agree with that? God owns it all. Number two, God entrusts me with some. God owns it all, and God entrusts me with some. Now, think about that. He doesn't have to entrust us with any. It's like when I first learned the principle of tithing at age 18. I became a Christian around age 17, went to church and got involved seriously, you know, right after my birthday around age 18. The pastor said, you know, live off 90%, give 10%. I thought that was a pretty good deal, because God had saved me from eternal damnation. He had forgiven me of all my sin, and as a business guy, all he was asking was 10%. So I'm like, you know, this is a pretty good deal. He could have set it up some other way. You know, God could have said, give me 50, live on 50. That would have been fair. He had done more than that for my life. But God owns it all, and God gives me some. And the way this principle works is how you handle the some will affect how much more you receive. And, you know, Jesus said, if you're faithful with what? Little, or the few, or the small things, you will be entrusted with more. So, you know, if you're faithful with managing your finances well, you're going to be entrusted with more. Doesn't always mean more finances. It could mean more. It's blessing. It could mean more finances. Don't get me wrong. If you've listened to my stewardship seminar, you know, I believe that the church has been too silent in the area of money. That God does want to bless His people, but it's not always tangible, but it sometimes is tangible. And so because we've remained silent, we allowed some of the extreme people to speak for God about money. And so they promise everything, you know, but God does promise some. And so the blessing is the intangible as well as the tangible favor of God. And so God does sometimes bless you financially when you honor Him financially. But He entrusts you with some. And you see, this is a fine point to understand that. The word here is steward. That God owns it all and He entrusts you with some. It's still His. It goes back to Him, you know, when it's over. And so the opposite of generosity is not just stinginess or greed, but it's ungratefulness. And so some of us are ungrateful, and we're living in this cycle of disappointment or of discouragement or even anger towards God because He's given us so little in our mind. But you didn't deserve any, so He gave you some. And so then how you handle that sum and being grateful for that is the principle to getting more. And so because of that, the way I honor God with what I've done is, number three, is through being generous. So generosity honors God. Generosity honors God. And when you learn these principles, and this is one of those things, you know, you have to listen to over and over on this recording, and you know, study this section beyond, is this really changes your thinking? Because most people in ministry, they operate according to a scarcity paradigm and not an abundance paradigm. And some of you are getting a little chills right now because you think this sounds like someone who's gone off their rocker. They're a little kooky. But no, what's happened is nobody's taught us this. We haven't looked at this from a biblical perspective, so we've allowed some extreme voices to kind of own this in the Christian realm. But we really do operate by a scarcity paradigm a lot of times. Let me just give you a silly example. I wear contacts. Anybody else in the room wear contacts? Yeah, so some of us wear contacts. We have to use this contact lens cleaner. And, you know, you got the little contact holders and you got the lens cleaner. So the other day I'm at the house and I will store, like, you know, soap and some products like that kind of underneath my sink. But the stuff I use regularly is in the medicine cabinet. And so I opened up the medicine cabinet. I reached to get my contact solution to take my contacts out after a long day. And I noticed there was just a little bit left in the bottle. You know, you ever had that? And, you know, there's just a little bit left in the bottle. So I'm thinking, what's the minimum I could put in each of these contact lens in the case? So I didn't rinse the lens off, although I know I should. I didn't rinse it before I put it in there. And then I put just the minimum amount. I put the contact lens in. I did it. Well, I did this for about 2 days, this whole process, you know. So I was busy or whatever, you know. Well, for some reason, the next morning, I still had a little bit left in the bottom of the bottle. But I had to look under the sink, and I looked underneath, and there was a brand new bottle of contact solution. Now, what do you think I did that morning with the bottle I thought was about empty? Man, I was squirting those things down. I was rinsing those things out. I was just abundantly using what little I had left. And the reason I could do that is because I had no fear that I was going to exhaust the supply. And so I was using it up, you know, I'm using it up. And then when I use it up, I just reach below and I get the other bottle. Sometimes we operate with such fear that God's not going to give us any more. And we're so stingy and we're so greedy that we end up damaging the very things God has entrusted to us. And instead of being good stewards of our contact lenses or the budget that God gives us in a church or the gifts that He's given us, we're doing minimal maintenance for average operation. And we have to be very, very careful about that. But when we realize God has abundant supply, you know, it's just keep giving, keep giving, keep giving, and God keeps giving to us. And I think that's a promise. You know, God says, I will give seed to the sower. And so, you know, my issue is to sow. And I scatter. And I scatter freely. And I scatter consistently. And I scatter abundantly. And I never, you know, worry about where the seed is going to be. So five levels of generosity. The first level is the upper left is encouragement. Be generous with your encouragement. Some of us are so stingy with this, you know, we never say thank you, we never say please, we never say good job, you know, we're quick to give kicks in the butt and slow to give pats on the back. So encouragement, you can go a long way with just encouragement, you know, silver and gold have I none, but whatsoever I have, I give you, you know, and of course, in this case, I say to you in the name of Jesus Christ, get up and walk. That's encouragement, you know, you as part of that, and in the big sense of the word. John Maxwell has a little thing that's impacted me, and I think it's in his book, Winning with People. He says, whenever I enter a room, I'm constantly adding myself, how can I add value to as many people as possible in the time that I have? And it's, you know, it's just a way of encouraging people. You know, famous preacher whose name escapes me says, you know, everyone's wanting to be encouraged. You know, they all got the big E on their head. Encourage me. You know, make me feel better. And we have something. We have some reason to encourage. Then we are generous with our money. This here, I'm talking about your personal finances. Personal finances. I used to go to a restaurant that the pastor's conference in my city went to. Some of you know where I'm going with this. I didn't go to this pastor's conference. It wasn't necessarily my type of thing, you know, not that I was against it, I was all for it. It just wasn't on a day that I could work. It just wasn't my type of thing. But I would go eat at this restaurant, and I would often hear the wait staff complaining about the pastor's conference that had been there the day before. And you know why they were complaining, right? Because they were the stingiest, cheapest of all their customers, of the no-tip people, you know. And I just wonder sometimes if we've gotten that bad rap. You know, that we're so quick to, you know, save a dime that we lose a life. And you know, we're just so you know, we're so stingy, and we, you know, we play tricks like, oh, I left my wallet. You know, who's, can you, do you mind covering this for me today? Or, you know, things like that. Or, you know, we're relying on other people to pay for the meal. We have a ministry purpose, but we have a worldly stinginess or something. And so instead of using our money the way God intends it to enjoy and to provide for us, we fall into this. So I just say, you know, get over that. A friend of mine says, you know, talks about a shoeshine guy that he likes to tip. And he says, you know, really probably the extra dollar doesn't make a big difference for the guy giving the shoeshine, but it really does change his perspective every day. You know, because generosity changes you. You know, when you realize it's not my money, it's money I've entrusted to you, and I'm just recycling it. Then being generous with your time or with your assistance. I talked about learn and return at the beginning, you know. Investing back, sharing with people, inviting them to be a part of your teams. I had a professor in grad school. I heard him say one time, you know, this would be a great place to work if it weren't for all the students. I'm like, look, you know, you wouldn't have a job if it wasn't for the students. But sometimes in ministry we say, this would be a great church to pastor if it wasn't for the people, you know. And we short people with our time and our assistance. Generous with rewards. Here I'm talking about with your volunteers or with your staff. I'm talking about more corporate rewards. You know, taking time to celebrate, taking time to play a little bit. If you're, you know, sometimes with bonuses. And then ultimately being generous with your life. I'm pushing you to be a person who's outrageously generous, to start a generosity revolution that points people to the generous God who so freely gave of not just his, you know, one of 50 sons, but his only son, you know, for us, and modeled that generosity. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son. He is no fool, Jim Elliot said, he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. And he lost his life, if he did, if you know that, for Christian's missions, and you've probably seen that movie. One little final point that I've been playing with recently is part of my desire is to raise up other leaders. I'm sure that's your desire too. Not only do I want to raise up teams, but I want to raise up people to lead teams, and I want to lead the leaders of those teams, and then I want to raise up staff to lead teams. You know, and so I'm constantly thinking about reproducing leadership, and I've really come to believe that just generosity may not be the total key to reproduction, but it is at least a key. And so maybe it should say in your notes, generosity is a key to reproduction. Because I think we've been sold a bill of goods in saying that you reproduce what you are. That's sort of true, but you really reproduce what you give. You know, and so what you give away is what comes back to you, pressed down, pushed over, spilled out, or whatever. So a few resources. Let me highlight this one. A book called Money, Possessions, and Eternity. Money, Possessions, and Eternity by a pastor named Randy Alcorn. That book is really a theology of money, and it will absolutely change the way you view the whole world. And that's not over-promising, because money drives the world, you know. We'd live in this thing. So it would just change your perspective and allow you to live life from God's perspective. It's freeing. It's just an incredible book. And you can probably have to buy it online like most of these books, because they probably don't have it at the bookstore up the street. Then Generous Living by Ron Blue. And then I have a little audio CD called Debt Free Pastor. And it's available probably on the table to help pastors get out of debt. Pastors on average are in more debt than any other group in society, with the exception of graduating seniors. We especially consumer debt and some of that, and then because we often live in pastoriums or pastor housing or whatever, we have even more debt when we get older. So I have this thing on debt-free pastor, and honestly, if you can't afford that, you know, we will give that to you. But if you can, that just helps us reproduce for more people on that. But I'll be glad to give you a download code for that one. Okay? I need to get a drum roll, because here we go. You know, can we do the drum roll? You know, everybody on the do it on the head of the neighbor who's sitting in front of you. No, don't do that. So we need a drum roll, because we're going to this last skill. And as you see, some of the skills have gotten a little less concrete as we've gone along. You know, very concrete skill what you read, very concrete skill of how you lead teams, a little more of an esoteric skill to anticipate the future. Goal setters, you know, that's a little bit more of an art. Being outrageously generous is certainly a lifestyle. And this last one, and this is the one that ties it all together. This last skill is sort of like, you know, how do I do all this? You know, what's the process for really making all this happen? Like, where do I get the time to do this reading? You know, where do I get the time to study on these teams or to make sure my teams are on track? Where do I get the time to think about the future? And where do, you know, how can I constantly hear from God when it comes to goal setting? By the way, back on goal setting, I don't know if I mentioned it, maybe here and here, I should have mentioned the book Experiencing God by Henry Blackaby. I think you've all probably gone through that at some time or another, but, you know, put that on your five-year rotation, because I think, you know, you want to get in on what God's doing, and that's kind of part of the skill, so I want to mention that. But, you know, where do we get time to do all that? And then being generous, you know, how does that, you know, where do I find, so there's just this pressure that we're under. So this last skill, I want to oversell it to you, but I think I can deliver on my sales pitch. I think this last skill will raise your effectiveness while lowering your stress. And so that's this last skill, you know. I thought about doing a recording. I'm actually doing one of this last skill. I thought about calling it How to Double Your Time Off and Increase Your Effectiveness in Ministry. Because I think it's a secret skill that we all know, but we don't practice. And you see, we all know more than we do. I know a lot more than I do, you know. And so this is the one. And here it is. All leaders of growing churches fulfill the seventh commandment. The seventh commandment. Now, for the fourth commandment. Okay, all leaders of growing churches fulfill the fourth commandment. Okay, it's hard to read upside down in my notes. What's the seventh? What's the seventh one? Do not commit adultery. That's not a bad skill either, okay? I told you I'm teaching on marriage this Sunday. I'm all confused, you know. I'm reading my notes upside down. It's sort of hard to see. So the fourth commandment, is there, are we definitely right on this? Next year I'm going to read the Old Testament, I promise. It's my commitment to read that. Okay. So all leaders fulfill the fourth commandment. And then obviously here I'm talking about the seventh. Now, you know, to have some fun with that, I was going to say that obviously, you know, the other six are pretty important as well. It's really hard to lead from behind prison bars, you know, thou shalt not steal or kill or whatever. And then, you know, if your family, if you don't take care of your family and all of that, it's really hard. It's really hard to lead people in a Christian church to worship idols. It's sort of difficult, you know. So you got this whole package, but we missed this fourth one. And part of what I want to do is I want to reframe what the fourth commandment is about when it comes to keeping the Sabbath. So back in your notes. Greater accomplishment, I believe, requires greater rest. And this was an extreme challenge to me because, you know, here I was with the opportunity to be around leaders, you know, like let's take, you know, the guy I worked with for a couple of years, Rick Warren, who, you know, no leader's perfect. Everybody has their own issues or whatever. But, you know, consistently taking time off, you know, being away from the office, you know, being rested or whatever. And it wasn't to say that there wasn't periods where he was worn out and, you know, pushed down or whatever. But that was an anomaly to me because I always thought, you know, the higher up the ladder you go, the more burnout you're going to experience. And I really have thought there ought to be a better way. And when we started the journey, one of my theories was can we, you know, work in a growing church without burning out people? And so we developed this whole thing, idea called stress and release that some of you have talked about, where we stress people for a period of time, then we give them a break. And so every ministry team has to have a rotation, and, you know, you can't lead a small group for more than 9 months without taking a break. And we built this whole system around stress and release. Well, you know, we got that from the rhythm of the Sabbath. There is a life rhythm into how God wired you up. And God wired that rhythm into the universe. You know, he worked for 6 days, and then he didn't need to rest. God didn't need to rest, but he modeled rest to put this rhythm into us. And so now if I can read the fifth commandment, Exodus, no, if I can now read this, Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 through 10. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. Holy means set apart. 6 days a week are set apart for your daily duties and regular work. That's a great word study if you ever want to look at those daily duties and regular work. But the seventh day is a day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. So here it is, that old 6-1. You know, you work 6 days, you take one off. They're coming for somebody in this room because you violated the seventh. Now, here's what I've learned. I've learned that 6-1 beats 5-2. But I've also learned, that's not a shock, right? Obviously, if you work 6 days, take one off, you're going to do more than a guy who works five, takes two off. It's 5-2 is an American invention, by and large, at least a Western civilization invention. So 6-1 beats 5-2. That's not news. But here's the news. 6-1 beats 7-0, too. The person who works all the time will actually get more, will get less done than the person who works 6 days and rests one. It's sharpen the saw, take time, all that stuff goes into that. So that's why Jesus said this. Mark 2:27 as well, as it's sort of repeated in different ways. Then Jesus said to them, the Sabbath was made to benefit people and not people to benefit the Sabbath. So this is really about us. It's about our accomplishment. Now, a few things on the Sabbath. Notice that the Sabbath comes after the work. So it's rest post-accomplishment. So you get something done, you achieve what you have to do, then you rest. Now, it's not a bad way to think of rest preceding work either. So it's really this unique thing. It's rest following accomplishment, but it's also rest to prepare for more accomplishment. So that's a nice touch as well. The Sabbath ultimately reminds us that we're not God. You see, we tend to take God's role in our church and say, this thing won't go without me. This team won't happen without me. This service won't get done without me. We won't be able to grow without me. And so Sabbath puts us in our rightful place. It says, God, why don't you take over for a while? I'm going to go home, it's like the old person who had insomnia. They said, well, God, you're up all night, so as long as you're going to be up, I'm going to go to bed. It reminds us that God is in control, that God is above all of this. Now, it's an acknowledgement, not an abdication. It's acknowledgement of God's responsibility, but not an abdication of our responsibility. So there's a fine line between Sabbath rest and just being lazy. And that's the difficult in this. And I actually have had such bad experience with lazy people that I didn't want to teach the skill. I mean, I really do think that a lot of pastors could accomplish more if they just weren't so lazy. Now, it's just us in this room, right? It's just this is the church world or whatever. But, I've had some bad experiences in the past of people who, like to sleep late. They're disorganized. They're poor time managers. They're slothful in just getting things done. They're slow. They don't show up on time. They're not prepared. That I didn't want to teach this because I want to push you. I want to push you to get more done, to be a better time manager, to be a better achiever. But I'm calling you to be above that. I'm calling you to be a person of an accomplishment. I'm calling you to get the daily disciplines right and to be diligent in your work and then add to that rest. You see, some people have abused the Sabbath as an excuse to not do. I want you to enjoy the Sabbath for something you have done. Does this make sense? So I am biased on this. And, I really do think that sometimes it's not an issue of enough rest. It's an issue of too much rest, you can actually lose ground by resting too much. So that's why it's 6-1. And the biblical work week, if you're really honest, you examine what the Bible says about this. You're talking about a 60-70-hour work week, kind of a 12-hour day work week for 6 days. So it's an intensive kind of work week that's there. So, if you don't have a grasp on that, then you're not going to get a grasp on the Sabbath. So that's why this next section of Sabbath skills is so important. So here are some skills that we have to develop in order to really reap the rewards of the Sabbath, which is godly rest, godly renewal. So, like time management. We have to become better time managers. And that's not an issue of Sabbath, but it's an issue of getting your work done in 6 days, Now, I know as pastors, we're always going to leave stuff on our desk. One of the tensions you have to live with as church leaders is you never finish. And as soon as you do finish, next Sunday comes around, So we're never going to do that, but we have to learn how to get more from the day. We have to learn to work all the hours we work. And, in sales management, they teach that the average salesman over an 8-hour day works less than 2 hours because they're busy driving to appointments, drinking coffee, socializing with friends, talking on the phone, fiddling with things on their desks, checking you know, the stock scores or ball scores or whatever. That's probably true in church ministry because we're people. So what I'm not trying to work more. I'm just trying to work the hours I say I'm working. You know, I want to get 60 minutes from the hour. So that's time management. You know, and I really come to believe that wasted time is wasted life. So I want to do time well. Then advanced planning. You know, part of the Sabbath is being able to advance, to put your schedule together and say, these are the things I'm going to get done before I take the time off. So that's part of it. That's part of anticipating as well. 100% dedication. That's a Sabbath skill as well. You know, because, the good shepherd in the Old Testament wouldn't leave the sheep outside the pen just because the sun's going down. You know, he gets the sheep in the pen before he goes on the Sabbath. Well, you know, the sun's going down, just leave those sheep. No, they get the sheep in the pen, and then the sun goes down. That's why it's sundown. You know, it doesn't sneak up on you, you know. So that's 100% dedication. I'm going to get my work done. I'm going to be a person that you can rely on. That's reliability. And so you've got to get all of this stuff going before you can really enjoy Sabbath. But then Sabbath has some amazing benefits, like balcony time. If you're looking for an R word, it would be the word reflection. Balcony time is time to reflect on where you are in life, how you're doing with your goals, and how you're doing with this church leadership thing. I use that word balcony time. That's from my coaching networks. I tell people that when you come to a coaching network, what I want to do in the network is put you on the balcony. So it's like your church is operating down here, but you get up on the balcony, you're looking down. And so you're able to work on your church and not just in your church. The old proverb on that was being able to see you can't see the forest for the trees. So you have to get above that. You know, you can't see the log jam until you climb the high tree and see the log that's jamming it. Oh, we've talked about that and all of this. So Sabbath is a time of reflection. Sabbath is also a time of recreation, or recreation is the word on that. You've probably taught that. You've probably studied that word. And then Sabbath is not just passive rest where you chill, you know, and you just veg in front of the television. Although, you know, a little bit of that is not bad. 30 hours of that is a waste, you know. But it's active rest. And, you know, sometimes you're more rested by doing something than you are by not. But it's active rest. And so Sabbath is a lifestyle. It's a way of living and breathing over the course of a week. And if done right, it will lead to greater accomplishment. So the question is, when it comes to your Sabbath, are you sinning by not keeping a Sabbath? Bryant Wright, who is a pastor of a church in Atlanta, Georgia, called Johnson Ferry Baptist Church, decided for some reason, after their church had made some investment in our new church, to kind of take me under his wing. And I was pretty grateful for this. He intentionally would call and say, hey, let's spend some time talking together. He would intentionally call and ask me how I was doing in my marriage and asking me about some personal questions that I'm not even going to dare say in a public setting like this. But I was grateful for that. And so out of his intentionality toward reaching out to me, you know, he and I became pretty close. And one day he told me, he gave me this talk on the Sabbath. And I, at that point, I don't think I'd taken a vacation. I'd rarely taken a day off. I am an obsessive, as you can tell, about a lot of things. I am a workaholic. And I enjoy my work. I never saw it as like, you know, I didn't do it out of duty. It was a delight to do this stuff. But he said, you know, if you're going to go to the next level, you're going to have to stop sinning. I thought, once again, here comes the lust talk. Here comes the, you know, the love your wife and kids talk, whatever. But he gave me the Sabbath talk. And I've been learning now for like 4 years how to do this. And in those 4 years, I've lived this of greater accomplishment with greater rest. Now, I have moments. You know, things go wrong. You know, things happen. Planes get delayed. I have moments where I'm under stress, like you do. I have moments where I'm anxious about things, like you do. But there is now more periods of rest and less times of anxiety. Now, anxiety hasn't gone away, but the level, at least, is changing. So let me show you what I think is a pretty good time management plan for a sustainable pace. And then I want to answer some questions on the Sabbath because, I'll tell you why in a minute. A pretty good time management plan for a sustainable pace. This is with apologies to my friend Steve Shogren, who talks about things being pretty good. None of them are going to be perfect, so I just go for pretty good. That's what I'm after, you know. I want a pretty good sermon this Sunday. You know, better average plus one. That's what I'm looking for, you know. So here's a pretty good time management plan for a, keywords, sustainable pace. Number one, divert daily. Divert daily. As I said, Sabbath is a lifestyle. And we often think of Sabbath, we've bought into the legalistic view of Sabbath as a sundown on Friday to, you know, sundown on Saturday or whatever. And we can talk about how to apply that to the Christian world and all that in a few moments. But I want you to have a period of time where you recover daily. This is called a daily diversion. This could mean taking a walk. It could mean taking a break. It could mean a daily devotion. It could mean doing, 10 push-ups, which would be a goal for me, I can do 10, it's just I have to rest in between, So I could do 100 if you give me enough time. I mean, 8 or 10 days. But you know what I'm saying? You just, sometime throughout the day, you pull aside and you just kind of somehow figure out a way to divert. And you just give that little bit of rest. You catch your breath. You say, what am I doing? What do I need to do? And all that. So you divert daily. Number two, you withdraw weekly. You withdraw weekly. I'm a big fan of a 24-hour period of time where you're off. You're not talking to the office. You're not checking email. You're off the phone. That doesn't mean you ignore your wife. It doesn't mean you ignore your kids. It doesn't mean if the toilet's backed up, you don't fix it. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about where you shut off the world of church ministry in the professional sense, and you focus on all these other areas of your life. I've had to learn how to read fiction, for example, because I'm a reader. I like to read. So I've had to throw in some fiction, from time to time to read something besides just church leadership book or just corporate leadership books. I actually have had to learn to watch TV. There's a few things that are really enjoyable that are out there, like 24. I love 24, I don't have enough anxiety in my life, so I have to create it, through my television watching or whatever. You don't want to do this always, but I'm saying, this weekly time of rest, just rolling around, with your wife, okay? I'm just going to say it, It's part of that. Now, for us, this is not Sunday. Duh, I had some, person in the church send me a chiding email because I was working on Sunday one day because I wasn't, I couldn't meet with them between services. I had to come back to the office and work. I'm like, look, Sunday's a work day, So, you have to find the Sabbath. And then it gets tricky with your kids and your wife, and it's not easy, None of these commandments are easy. They all require work. But, you withdraw weekly. Then you measure monthly. Measure monthly. This is where you look at your goals, you look at where you're going, you look at who you are, you look at your marriage, you look at how your team leading, you look at your reading schedule, and you say, how am I doing? Am I on track or off track? Am I gaining altitude, am I losing altitude? Because you're going to do one or the other. I call this measurable progress in reasonable time. That's my goal. I want to make measurable progress in reasonable time. That's what I ask of my staff. I'm not asking you to be Superman or Superwoman. I just want measurable progress in a reasonable time. If you got 10 volunteers, and over the next month you can recruit 12, that's measurable progress. If you recruit 15, you might get a bonus, But I'm not expecting you to get 150, okay? But a measurable progress in a reasonable time. But then if God blesses, you can even do more than that. God blesses and there's an exceptional opportunity, then that's what will happen. You need more of this. And then you abandon annually. Now, are you with me on this? That's a pretty good time management plan for sustainable pace. If you find yourself overly anxious, you find yourself overly worn out, it's probably because you're violating one of these four steps. Here's the key point. I've said it already, but I'll say it again. It's possible every year to achieve more while enjoying life. While enjoying life. I was talking to Steve Stroop the other day, and Steve's one of these old guys. He's probably in the early 50s, And I know. The crowd's not as young as I said it was earlier. But Steve's been in church leadership for 27 years, and has been leading this church, and just doing some really good things. And he's had an increasing pace over time. And I was talking to him. He said, when I turned 50, I noticed my energy level started going down. I said, well, I noticed that when I turned 30. And he says, well, it gets worse, And he gave me this phrase. He said, my goal right now is, as I get older, to leverage wisdom against energy. And I thought, wow, that's good, So I want to learn all I can. I want to develop these skills while I can. I want to set the right goals. I want to learn to be generous, and I want to learn to obey the Sabbath commandment so that as my energy level goes down, my wisdom level is going up, and then later I can leverage wisdom against energy. That's sustainable pace, in my opinion. Now, what's my plan for keeping the Sabbath? What is going to be my plan for keeping the Sabbath? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to be consistent with the Sabbath, and I want you to be conscious of the Sabbath, but not legalistic of the Sabbath. You know, so don't buy into legalism. Let me tell you what Bryant Wright does on his Sabbath. I mentioned he's the pastor that got in my face and convinced me to stop sinning in this area. So I'm like, look, what do? Do you sit around all day? You know, what's the Sabbath schedule? Tell me what it is. Well, he's at a point where his wife is at home, and she's not working, so he takes the Sabbath on a Tuesday. And nothing comes in, you know, on a Tuesday. And actually, I think it's Tuesday. He may have changed the day, but whatever day it was, it's the day that worked out with his wife. So, you know, he sleeps in a little bit later, maybe an extra 30 minutes or so, you know, spends a little longer time with devotion, has a nice breakfast at home, you know, just relaxing that morning. You know, just kind of catching up, you know, reading, all that. Then him and his wife, they go to brunch, a late breakfast, early, you know, lunch or whatever, that kind of thing. And they spend, it's a two-hour lunch. And he said, I used to be so legalistic that I wouldn't talk to my wife about church stuff because, you know, don't want to talk about that. But I couldn't do that. You know, her life's in the church, my life's in the church. It was actually hurting our enjoyment. So I find that, you know, for about the first hour, we just talk about anything related to church. And then we exhaust ourselves, you know, talking about that. And then the next hour, sort of spent talking about our family, looking at our calendar, you know, thinking about the next vacation, doing all that. And then after that, you know, two and a half hour lunch, they do something they enjoy. You know, they may go to the gym together, they may go for a walk, they may go to a show. You know, they just do something they enjoy together. Then she has to go pick the kids up from school. So, you know, her day kind of kicks back into normal routine or whatever. And he just continues that dinner with the family, relaxed, you know, that night. And then before he goes to bed, he kind of reengages the next day, makes his plan for the next day, and finishes out his time. And that was freeing to me. You know, I've modified that. I've adapted that. And I actually start mine the night before, you know, because I have to write down everything that I was working on the night before. I have to do that data dump, and then I'll pick that up, you know, 24 hours later so I don't forget where I'm at. Because if I don't, I'm constantly trying to remember. And I don't forget on Thursday to do this. Don't forget, you know, when the Sabbath is over to do that. And you know, you have to figure out what works for you. And it's going to be as unique as the people in this room. But it does pay off. Here's the best book I know on this subject. The Rest of God by Mark Buchanan at the bottom of page 8. That's not a theological statement. You know, he's not trying to, you know, show you new stuff about God. It's The Rest, R-E-S-T, of God. And then a great book to help you with this, Time Tactics for Successful People. And then Roy and I have a resource that will be out by the time this recording is out, called The Power of the Sabbath, How to Lower Stress and Double Your Time Off, and Make $1 million in Ministry. No, I'm just kidding. How to Lower Stress and Double Your Time Off. Okay, all right, I've got just a few minutes before 12, if the watch I borrowed is correct. So that means I've got a couple of minutes to answer questions on the Sabbath, and then I've got 5 minutes to land this seminar. Okay, so can everybody hang with me on this? So question here. Yeah, with just very low exception, 90% of my staff have their Sabbath on Saturday. So what I've had to do as a church is, because Saturday, the reason most people don't take Saturday off is because they're not ready for Sunday. And so if you've read or listened or been to anything that Jason and I have done together, Jason Atley, our worship arts pastor, we have a seminar coming up a little bit later that Roy can tell you about. Roy, can you get the date on that seminar that we're doing with Jason for worship leaders and all? We have a thing in our worship planning for life transformation that we call the Thursday midnight rule. So we require all of our staff to have everything done for Sunday by Thursday midnight. Now, that's really Thursday end of day, but there's rehearsals and stuff on Thursday. Sometimes things go wrong, you know, and you have to do it after work or whatever. But we found that by backing up Sunday preparation to Thursday, Friday becomes a dreaming planning day, a catch-up day, and then Saturday becomes a real Sabbath. So we know we're done, because the reason Saturday is so difficult is because you're constantly thinking, I got to go pick that stuff up, or oh, I didn't get that done, you know. So you've got to build these systems around your worship planning. And Jason and I did a whole six-hour workshop called Planning Worship Services for Life Transformation, and it integrates that principle in it. If you can't get that, go to churchleaderinsights.com and click on Downloads. I think it's under the store, and that you can find that Thursday midnight rule. It's not free anymore, though. The podcasts are free for like a month, and it costs $3 to download it or something like that. But that's just an example. Now, I do a different day. And, call it senior pastor privilege, call it what you want. But I take a day of the week off. And that's just, you know, purely a scheduling choice for me. It's not because I don't have Saturday under control. It's for different reasons, like my writing schedule and seminars and stuff like that I do. So it's in flux. Yeah. Yeah, they work 6 days. And then we try to reward them, you know, along the way for different time. I'm not putting that out as a model. I'm just telling you what we do. You know, you have to. You the great thing about it is you get to decide it yourselves. You know, you get to put together your own culture that you want. Yes, one more question. Yeah, the active rest, that's a great question. That'll be a great one to transition to this final step. Here's something you got to ask yourself. What drains me as a person and what energizes me as a person? And you're constantly looking for those two things. And like even in just regular leadership, there are certain things that you have to do on staff right now that just drain you. For example, I used that heart-wrenching illustration earlier about having to go to the hospital. Some of you in this room, that gives you tremendous energy, and you love that. Others of you, you would just about as soon have a root canal to do it. I'm in the latter, but I'm not willing to sacrifice the root canal. Maybe like a filling or something, but not a root canal, you know. So like, you know, doing pastoral care stuff really drains me. So obviously as the church grows, I can't keep doing that. I have to hire staff to do some of that because there are people who get energized by that. But then also in your recreation life, what drains you, what energizes you, you know. But then what energizes you, those are the kind of activities you want to put on your day off. That's active rest. So, you know, going to play tennis, going to work out, you know, maybe going to the movies, you know, maybe eating popcorn and having a little movie night at the house or whatever. Those things may all energize you. And, you know, add those things into your mix. So use active rest as a way of energizing yourself. Does that help? So, yeah, and it's different for everybody, you know. And you've got, and your wife may not always share the same thing. So, you know, you have to agree. Yeah, to allow each other to do that. Like, you know, my wife has some things that I pay for her to go do, you know, because I'm not willing to necessarily go with her on those kind of things. So she, you know, if she wants to go to a museum, go on like a day they have a tour, you know, and do that, because I just, golly, that just drains me, you know. But, you know, then there's stuff I like to do, which is roam around and use bookstores, you know, and so she, you know, gives me the ability to go do that or something. So, you know, it's all part of that. I'll pay for her to take a friend out to lunch if she'll let me go roam around in the basement of a dark bookstore, you know. Okay. Let's wrap this up. The final thoughts are pretty short, as you see on page 9. I want to just ask you to make some decisions. I am an evangelist. I do like to call for decision. So I think just by checking this box, it will actually make a difference over the long haul. If you check the box and you review the notes 30 days from now, it'll make a bigger difference. If you check the box, review the notes 30 days from now, do it again 90 days from now, it'll make a bigger difference. You check the box, you review the notes 30 days from now, 90 days from now, you get the recordings and listen to them again in a few months from now, it'll make an even bigger difference. So I think it'll help you. So 6 final decisions. Number 1, I will never stop growing as a church, or as a leader, or as a church. I will never stop growing as a leader, if I can read. I will never stop growing as a leader. If you stop growing as a leader, you've abdicated leadership. We'll know if you stop growing. You know, you get up and you say, I haven't really been growing as a leader that much lately. Your people already know that. You know, they can already tell. So never stop growing as a leader. Number 2, I will work to be a leader of team leaders. Go buy Pat McMillan's book. Get into the arena of team leaders. Take somebody with you. Start doing things with others. Multiply volunteers. Next, I will set and achieve godly goals in all areas of my life. So you do that 1-hour exercise you talked about, you know, 10 goals, 6 areas, 10 minutes apiece. I will invest time preparing for the future God has for me. I forget the guy's name. I have it in the article in your appendix. He said, my interest in the future is simple. That's where I plan to spend the rest of my life. I will learn to give generously. I will learn to give generously. Start with the tithe, then give more than the tithe, and then start being a generous person with your time, your talent, and your whole life. And then I will consistently keep the Sabbath, and you get to define that. As long as God says that's how to define it, then let him reveal to you his plan for that. Don't be legalistic, just be consistent. And then here's a bonus one. You know, we talked about this as a thread. I will share what I learned with other church leaders. You know, you find a good resource, you find a good seminar. That's how most of you heard about this. Somebody found something here they liked. Somebody found a resource they liked, so I hope you'll do that. Let's read Ephesians 3:20 out loud together. Now glory be to God. By his mighty power at work within us, he is able to accomplish infinitely more than we would ever dare to ask or hope.